Hey everyone, welcome to episode 62 of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. I've got two segments for you this week. First up is a Wii U third-party segment with myself, Neil, Mike, Zach, and Patrick. And after that is a segment about Paper Mario Sticker Star with myself, Patrick, and Tyler. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Neil Ronahan, and welcome to another fun Wii U What You Been Playing segment here on Connectivity. With me today, we have Mike Sklenz, who will tell you all about your mouses and your rabbits.
Heyo.
Got Scott Thompson, who is blopping zombies? Something along those lines?
Pretty much.
Patrick, who likes to pretend that he's Batman while dressing up in a cape and a cowl. And Zach, who is playing Darksiders 2 with a pro controller, because fuck the gamepad.
You don't want to hurt the boy, Harvey!
At first I thought you said Patrick was dressing up in a cape as a cow.
Cow.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah, I'll have to emphasize the L whenever I say cow.
What game would that be, Mike, if you had to equate that to something?
Dude, Worms. Worms Armageddon.
I thought it meant you had played both Batman and Funky Farm.
Patrick, you played Funky Farm on 3DS, didn't you?
I did play it on 3DS.
You probably also played the Wii U version then, too.
Probably.
Because it's probably just the 3DS version.
Have you guys looked at the community on Miiverse?
Oh, it's the best.
Well, how about Rabbids Land? Someone pointed this out during the live stream, that Rabbids Land is just, I think it's Destructoid, one of the podcasts or something, where it's just a bunch of people saying things about Willem Dafoe. It's fucking amazing.
That's kind of what happened to Funky Barn.
Yeah.
Is it Funky Barn or Funky Farm?
Funky Barn, I think.
Funky Barn. That's what happened to Funky Barn, is a bunch of trolls kind of just took it over and turned it into like if you're on, it's like 4chan, kind of. It's like, that's where they put 4chan.
Dude, I love Miiverse because of what's happening with all that stuff. Like the Your Shape stuff with Scott, I've checked that out a few
times. Your Shape stuff
is
so good.
I love Your Shape. I can't help but to post, because it's such a small community that I love it, because things get seen. Like, if you post to Mario or Nintendo Land, it's like, it's gone within 5 minutes. You know, it's buried. But that community is like 200 people, so I just absolutely love just posting stupid shit and just getting lots of yes.
Yeah, and with Madden, it's funny, because it's just a cascade of, like, go team go. With, I should just do a count. Or, like, check it every day and just pick, like, what teams are being counted for. There were a lot of Packers. There were, I think, I'm trying to think of the teams that I saw a lot. Packers and Bears, representing.
Giants, I assume.
Oh, Giants. Giants, yes. There were a lot of depressed Jets fans after the game last week. I mean, a lot of the big teams that you would expect.
They might have been depressed, but they had to be impressed by exactly how much they sucked that game.
I mean, Madden's
guys,
cool.
Guys, I'm never impressed by how much Tebow can suck.
He's not even playing.
That's how much he sucks.
But Madden, like, they have, like, you know, this cascade of go team go, and then occasionally someone will ask a question about the game, and then you'll see it go down, and then that person will comment on their comment being like, does anyone know this? Everyone's too busy about being like, go team go, rah, rah, rah.
That's amazing. Yeah, Miiverse is such an interesting, like, social experiment. Yeah. It's great going from channel to channel and really just seeing what you find. Like, I had no idea this stuff was going on in Funky Barn, but I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah, and the Rabbids Land stuff is also classic.
Oh, yeah, Rabbids Land, yeah. I gotta check that out,
just too. A bunch of Willem Dafoe. And, I mean, Willem Dafoe's pretty rad, so.
I'm just surprised that they let you, I mean, I know because people ask, like, is this game worth buying? But I'm surprised they let you comment in it without having played the game. I wonder if that's something they thought about enforcing, or.
I know there's some way that, at least I've heard that, like, there's, like, some kind of, like, checklist of what you've played. So maybe they limit you somehow? I don't know.
I think it indicates on your post whether or not
you've
played it.
There's that little box with a checkmark on it. That means you've played the game.
So then I guess maybe, you know, there could be mods if you spam it and people could report it if you're a dick about it.
Right.
Did you guys see that fake article about someone wrote a fake Awada Asks on, like, how they developed the penis drawing detection technology?
That was great.
I cracked up at that.
That shit took off, too. A lot of people, like, retweeting that as if
it
was real.
It fooled a lot of people, yeah.
In all honesty, I saw that, and I was just like, what the hell? And went and checked the Awada Asks for it. I'm like, wait a minute, this is from, like, a month ago. We already would have known about this. I had a moment where I thought that, like, there was a new one that got released.
Yeah, it's so well written.
It really is. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't seen any penises. I'm surprised I don't even just slip through, like, for a second.
They don't last long. It's pretty much like you need to look right away.
Just like in real life?
I think as soon as something gets reported, it gets hidden until the mods see it and decide.
Right, right. And there's so many people, it's so easy for someone to be a party pooper and report it.
Or maybe it's after like 4 or 5 reports or something.
All right, well, we have a shit ton of games to talk about. I think in totality, we've got somewhere around 10 at least. So let's start off with a guy who only has one game to talk about, because we're going to focus about third-party Wii U games this time. Well, we'll probably be talking more about Mario and Nintendo Land as the weeks go on. But for now, Mike's going to kick us off with some Epic Mickey 2, The Power of Two.
I wish it was better.
It's fucking terrible.
It's not terrible.
It's bad.
It's good. Okay, this is a great game, a very good game, bogged down by technical issues. And I think a lot of it has to do with the Wii U port, because they didn't even start working on it until, like, February or something, right?
Yeah, it's like a baby. It took 9 months to make.
And it was done by this company, Heavy Iron, who I've literally never heard of them.
I think they made Kinect games.
Wonderful. You see how much money that brought them. Now they are doing ports of games to Wii U at the last minute.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest problem with it. I'd like to play it on another platform and see how it plays on, like, the PlayStation or the Xbox, or even the original Wii, because I'm sure that was written on totally different code.
Well, you can read Alex Kalafi's review of the Wii version up on the site. Give it, like, a 6 or a 6.5.
Yeah, he didn't like it that much. I really want to see what it plays like on the Xbox or the PlayStation. I might, like, rent it or
that's still
something.
Done by a different company. Like, Junction Point's they only did the Wii version.
They only did the Wii version.
Yes, and then it was Blitz Games did the 360 PS3 version, but they had a lot more time with that.
Yeah, and they were probably working with Junction Point the whole way through the game. Like, they were co-developing at the same time, probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Wii U version was obviously ported over and suffers from so much slowdown.
It's miserable. Like,
it doesn't, like, ever get, like, stutter, super stuttery, like, not frame by frame or something like that, but it never consistently runs almost ever at full speed.
I mean, it's the kind of thing where Mike and I both have this game, and I've put about an hour or so into it on two different occasions, once with someone for co-op and once without, and I found all the co-op stuff to be fucking terrible, both with a person and without a person, and I found the game mechanics to be not improved at all from the previous game, and it seems like you're exploring the same areas and the same shit happens. But this time it's voice acted, which, I mean, the presentation of the game is fantastic.
Oh, it's so good. That's what really makes it so painful that the game just doesn't run well enough, is that the set dressing is some of the best in any game you'll ever see. Like, the art direction is so strong.
I love that it's voice acted.
And all of the voice actors are amazing.
Cary Elwes, he is Gus the Gremlin. Yeah. That's awesome.
And it's, you know, if the guy who do the voices of Mickey and everything do the voice, you know, it's the same voice actors.
Yeah.
It's Disney's voice actors. So, it's, yeah, a lot of it is really good. And the cutscenes are done in this Mary Blair, It's a Small World style that looks fantastic. It's the art direction is so strong in the game, and it just hurts so much that it just can't quite run at full speed, because the rest of it is, it's standard fare platforming. It's not going to light the world on fire as far as its, like, gameplay mechanics, but they are sound gameplay mechanics. They're fun enough. They're, like I said, it's not that great. What makes it great is, if you're a Disney nerd, the environment that you're traveling through, and the story is interesting, too, if you're a Disney fan. So it really appeals to that part of me a lot, because I absolutely loved that aspect of the first game, and now I get to see all of this wonderfully recreated art in high definition the whole time I play it. And you're just seeing all these weird pieces of, like, Disney past, like, in one of the areas you go through, the float yard, which is, like, where all the old attraction floats are, no, parade floats are, and there's some parade floats that I remember seeing, like, when I went to Disney World as a kid. Like, there's this one of Donald, I think it was for, like, the 15th anniversary of Walt Disney World, or maybe the 25th anniversary of Walt Disney World, and he's got, like, this giant, like, just headdress of fruit, like, massive, like, Chiquita banana, like, fruit headdress thing on, and it's exactly as I remember it from my childhood, and it's so cool seeing shit like that pop up in this game, and the game, like I said, the gameplay is fun enough, but if it was not dressed the way it was, it would not be a good game at all, I don't think. It's not bad gameplay, it's just not great. The paint thinner mechanic is really cool. It's something that no other game does. But the big problem is that the game seems to slow down the most when you're doing it, because it's, I think it's having problems with the paint physics and what's slowing the whole thing down. You'll get into an area where there'll be like four or five dudes like slinging paint or paint thinner at you, trying to hurt you. And the whole point of the game is that like you can either put them on your side by covering them in paint, or you can erase them by hitting them with thinner. And I almost feel compelled to use thinner, because if I make them disappear, they stop throwing paint around, and they stop, their assets disappear from the game, so that's one less thing that
everyone
has to
animate.
But don't
you get it, Mike? Playstyle matters.
Playstyle does matter. If you take the thinner path, the game may run a little
bit. The game
better.
Might crash if you paint people.
I've been taking the paint path. It's rough going, especially during some of the bigger boss fights, but it's really fun to play through it and just see all the art, so I'm gonna suffer through the rest of it.
Godspeed.
Maybe I'll trade it in and put the money towards a PlayStation or Xbox.
I'll be honest, it's probably going to be the first Wii U game that I sell or trade in.
I want to like it a lot.
I wanted to as well. And
so is the game good on the other systems?
I have not heard good things at all.
Well, Mike, didn't you play it at that event?
I only really played the Wii U version because they had one. They only had one Wii U console, and it of course had the longest line.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Okay, then here's my question about this game and the first one too, and that 3DS one too. Are these games only good if you're a Disney nerd?
Well,
are they otherwise awful?
I wouldn't say they're awful. I would say they're aimed at a younger audience, to some degree. Like the developers obviously understand that children are going to play their game. So the platforming mechanics and like the quest mechanics of it are fairly simple. They're right. Like, you know, oh, take this thing over here and give it to this guy. Like,
yeah.
Really simple kind of like questing mechanics like that. So it's not that intricate, because I think they want to avoid making it overly complex.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem like they're hampered by that. And I also, you know, played and reviewed the 3DS version, and it is the kind of thing where like, if you're not a Disney fan, I feel like they're competent games, or at least the 3DS one is, and the first one was competent. This one on Wii U is an abomination, but you get a lot more out of it. It's kind of like with the Adventure Time game. If you're a fan of Adventure Time, you're going to get a lot more out of it, but I think, from what I hear, is that even if you're not a fan of Adventure Time, it's still a solid game. You just won't get as much out of it.
It is. It's a very easy Zelda 2 clone.
Considering how balls hard Zelda 2 is, maybe that's what I need in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's. I don't want to talk about the Adventure Time game because we're not doing that this segment. But I got it, and it's really good. But it is easy.
Mike, what Wii U games did you get at launch? Like, what do you have so far right now?
I've got Nintendo Land, Mario, and Epic Mickey.
Oh, jeez. So a third of your games is awful.
Yeah, but it was a review copy.
Well, yeah, I was gonna get Epic Mickey on Xbox or PlayStation, but then the review copy showed up. So well, I'll play it here.
You know, there's always such enthusiasm and, you know, hopefulness, optimism about these new Epic Mickey games when they come out, and then people are just decimated.
I think
by
this
how
is going to start to
are.
Be like a Sonic cycle kind of thing. Where, I mean, I unfortunately, as cool as Warren Spector is, he is becoming Molyneux-esque with his grand ideas of what this game is going to be and how it's going to, you know, playstyle matters, et cetera, et cetera. And then it's just kind of like, oh, so you had all these ideas, and this is what the actual game is. It's like, you know, the first Fable, except for, you know, Fable 2 kind of actually lived up to that promise, and that's what I was hoping out of Epic Mickey 2, and it's...
They've got one more shot with this franchise.
It depends on how this one sells.
If this one sells well, they've got one more shot, I think, because I don't think people are going to buy a third one unless it...
Like, I think there will be another 3DS game, because at least from what I've heard from some rumors that... I mean, it's obvious if you play that game, it feels like half a game. So, hopefully, the reason why it feels like half a game is because they're like, oh, you're gonna make a sequel.
I've actually heard the Adventure Time game is like half a game.
Yeah, I heard they're both quite short. I got them both, so hopefully it won't take me long to beat them. Epic Mickey, though, real quick for 3DS, it's been on sale for $25 on Amazon for every now and then, so I would say it's probably worth that.
Maybe.
That's almost half price. And you're getting half a game, so...
Yeah. So, Scott, take us away with some, you know, first-person shooter shit.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Let's start with Black Ops 2, I guess, because I don't have as much to really say about that blops. I guess all I can really say is it works, you know, which was my biggest thing going into it. Like, I was kind of hesitant to, I mean, really, I mean, that's...
So it's the opposite of Epic Mickey.
It really is, yeah.
It's a successful port.
You know, like, going into it, I was excited to pick this up just for the opportunity to play it with, like, NWR staff and listeners and readers and all that stuff. You know, and then at launch, I was like, I don't know, you know, like, what if it's a shitty port? What if, you know, we don't know anything about the Wii U's, like, online capabilities. Like, what if it's a Smash Brothers situation where it just, like, doesn't work, you know? And that's the only reason I'm buying it. But I still got it at launch, and, I mean, it's awesome. Like, it works flawlessly. I mean, you know, start the game, I'm in a match within, like, 10 seconds, really, and...
Are there a lot of people on it? I've heard some scuttlebutt that there are not a lot of people playing it online.
There's usually between, like, 800 to 1,000 people playing.
Cool.
I heard it, the only thing, it was hard if you don't want to play Team Deathmatch, it's hard to find the other games.
That's the thing, like probably between, like, 600 to 800 of those people will be playing Team Deathmatch, and then, like, spread across the, like, 11 other modes. you'll get, like, I mean, at times it'll tell you, too. I mean, when you highlight something, it'll tell you how many people are playing. At most times, like, half of the game modes, no people are playing. So you, wow. There's just, you can't even play that mode.
Maybe we'll have to try to organize a community night where we play the other modes.
Right, see, that would be perfect, because no one's in there, so we could just create a big party and just jump.
So you can create a party, because that was something that was foreign on the Wii, because, like, GoldenEye, like, I remember doing a couple Wi-Fi nights with that.
You people on a team.
Where we were trying to plan, like, you know, getting all the people together in a match of 8 people, and it was near impossible to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, I want to say the game supports up to 16 people, maybe more in some of the bigger game modes. And yeah, you can create a party right from the main menu, right when you log in. It tells you everyone on your friends list who's playing the game, and then you just highlight their name and say invite to party, cool. Or you can just join their game in progress. And it's like, it's so smooth. I mean, really, yeah, it's like playing, like, on PS3 or Xbox Live. Like, it really is incredible with how well it
works. What does the gamepad do when you're playing it, like, on the TV? When you're playing it on the TV, what's the gamepad do?
I don't use it just because I find it kind of bulky, and, like, with a game like this where you have to be quick. But what it does is your mini-map is on there, and then your kill streak, like, rewards that you can use.
Okay, you can just use a touchscreen tap.
Exactly. Instead of having to press something on the D-pad to select it and then use it, you can just press the button for it on the gamepad.
When the mini-map's down on the gamepad, does it pull it off the TV then?
No, it's still on the TV too.
Okay, because I feel like with a game like that, it'd be a pain to look back and forth really quick.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it's on both. And then I did play a little bit on the gamepad when I was playing last night and watching the Packers lose.
God, secret best feature.
It's so wonderful.
Yeah.
I didn't think it would be that cool, but it's that cool.
It really is. A game like this, playing the multiplayer, it was kind of a little difficult because the resolution is just not as great. So it was still kind of hard to, like, make off enemies far in the distance, but it was totally still playable, and I had a lot of fun with it. And you can plug in your iPhone headphones and use your microphone to talk to people. So that's what I've been doing. Yeah, I don't even need to buy a headset.
That's a really cool thing that I don't think anyone really knew going in.
Yeah.
It's just right. Like, oh, this is how the headset works. It works with some shit you probably already have,
which
means people are actually going to use them.
Right. So, yeah, a lot of people do use them. So it's really cool, you know, to actually be, like, talking to people and, like, coordinating.
I might have to pick this game up at some point because it sounds like it's fun online. And have you played the single player at all?
No, I haven't even touched it. I probably played, like...
Wait, it has a single player?
I hear it's so dumb and fun. Like, the single player
looks
retarded. Like, you're on horseback and you fire a missile at people. Like, that's incredible.
It does look so stupid. It jumps between, like, the Cold War and then, like, 10 years from now. It jumps between those two time periods. I'll get to it eventually. What's kind of cool is you can actually set the game where you want it to start when you boot the game. So, like... What I have it now set is it just jumps straight to the multiplayer menu, so I don't even see single player or anything. The one downside right now, which maybe they'll patch, but maybe it's something just system wide, you can't press the home button while you're playing multiplayer, or even when you're in the multiplayer menus. It's like completely disabled.
They do that with like Mario Kart, yeah.
That's because it pauses the game, and you can't pause the game during a live match.
Right, so what they need to do, like what, you know, on PS3, when you press, you know, the home menu or, you know, the PS button, the game just keeps running, and then the menu overlay just comes on top of it, so you can still be killed and stuff. They need to just figure something like that out.
Miiverse, man. But I know I need to get my screenshots.
At least so you could, just
There'd
like...
no see... way to get a screenshot of what you wanted in time.
But, like, at least so you could get that, like, see why you're... you know, the home button's glowing blue. So, like, you could see, like, oh, someone signed on or I got a message. I could see if you need to go to Meverse to check those things, and it's going to be like, well, we're going to have to disconnect you from the game.
Well, when you get a phone call or a WeChat call, it, like, pulses. It just pulses and pulses and pulses because it was doing it in the middle of the epic Mickey cutscene I was watching on Sunday when you guys were doing the live stream.
trying to call me. And so that's kind of annoying. I understand during the match, but even, like I said, even in the menus, you can't do it. So, like, I can't just, like, go and, like, see who's on and stuff. So that kind of sucks. But other than that, a total blast. The gamepad, or the Pro Controller, I should say, feels awesome. And, it's just been nice to, like, I mean, the Wii U's just been awesome for me. Like, I can have, like, Netflix on for Tegan when she's awake, like, watching Yo Gabba Gabba, and then, like, Tabby and I will play Mario, and then she goes to bed, and then I just, like, jump on Call of Duty and play Call of Duty, like, online. I mean, it's just great to have one system.
I love this damn system so much.
I know.
I was playing Mario in bed the other night. It's so good. I find that I don't even turn the TV on whenever I want to play Mario.
I finally figured out how to go off TV play for Sonic Racing. I learned that that's a feature of the game. Thank you, the internet. And no thank you to Sega, because I checked the instruction manual. No dice. Nowhere in the game does it say, like, oh, tap the gamepad screen, and it'll take it to off-TV play. It's just, like, you hold a finger on the touchscreen on the gamepad, and then it has a little, like basically, an image of, like, swipe down the screen, and then, like, you know, take the image from the TV and put it on the gamepad.
So, yeah, Black Ops 2, very good. If any listener out there has it and isn't friends with me yet on Wii U, add me. I'm totally down to play it pretty much all the time. I've been playing a lot with Lag64, who now goes by Nintendad. Changed his name on Twitter and stuff. Yeah, so I've been playing a lot with him. That's been a lot of fun. Actually, James Dawson from the staff and I got a chance to play with guys from Treyarch last week.
And you got your shit wrecked.
Yeah, I did okay, but yeah, obviously they were very good. So that was pretty sweet. I just realized if we want to talk about it at all, I forgot to mention, I have been playing Your Shape. If anyone's interested in hearing anything about that. If not, I'll just skip it and go to Zombie U.
Zombie U.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I'm okay without hearing about a Jenny McCarthy game.
She's not in it anymore.
Oh, thank God.
We'll have more time to talk about fitness games in the future.
Yeah, I guess so.
Can do the Sing Party Just Dance 4 Your Shape episode.
Also known as the episode no one will listen to.
Your Shape basically has, like, Just Dance in it, like a small Just Dance section.
That's actually cool.
Which is kind of weird. There's, like, Lady Gaga and Rihanna and LMFAO songs in it, and you can dance and stuff. No, it's not SOS, actually.
Okay, I don't even
know Just Dance 3 has Gangnam Style.
No, that's Just Dance 4. Just Dance 3 has Let's Go to the Mall.
Let's go to the mall!
Yeah. Let's go to the mall is in... Or is it Sandcastles in the Sand? One of them is in
Either
Just
one.
Dance 3.
I don't even care.
Okay, so Zombie U.
Zombie U is fucking awesome. It really is.
I played about 15 minutes of it during the live stream the other day, and it was incredible. I still need to find time to actually play the fucking game, but it's so cool.
It's one of those games, I kind of feel like I had this feeling playing the Dead Space games where it's like, I want to play it, but I don't want to play
it.
You know what I mean? It's like,
I'm terrified.
I have to be in just the right mood because it's not relaxing at all. I mean, it's super stressful.
I'll need like a bottle of whiskey to drink from whenever I get stressed out during that game. Exactly. I'll be like passed out on the floor within 40 minutes.
I think the big thing is you just have to accept death. Like, going into it originally, I was like, I'm going to stay this one character the whole time. I'm going to prove this game I can do it. And then I was dead like 20 minutes into the game. And then, you know, it bummed me out. And then I was like, I'm on my second character. Now I'm going to really do it. And then I just died today, so I'm on my third character. So you kind of just have to embrace that you're going to die. And I think that alleviates some of the stress so that you can keep getting through. But it really is just a super tense game. I mean, it's kind of ugly. It's rough. Like, but I don't understand really the low review scores.
Been getting pretty hit pretty hard.
Yeah, and like it really is a good game. I mean, like the melee combat, which you'll be doing a lot because ammo's so limited. I mean, it is kind of the same thing. You just have your cricket bat. You know, you hold L on the gamepad, and then you press R.
I kind of like that. I like the way that feels.
Oh yeah, and like it's simple, and like, but I guess I can understand because it doesn't really evolve. You know, like you pretty much do that the entire time. But it feels right, and it's stressful. And that's only useful when you're fighting one, maybe two zombies. If you have like two or three or more zombies on you, like that's it. Like you can't melee. You gotta run away. You gotta use some of your big guns.
But then again,
because
this is also coming from the person who in BioShock leveled up everything you could with the wrench because I just like beating the shit out of people.
So you just have some sort of mental condition.
Yeah, like I would have like a fucking like a, I had some of the plasmids or whatever powered up, and then I just have the wrench. I didn't really do anything with guns in that game. It was incredible.
That's cool.
But yeah, it's super rad, and it will send out announcements to you. They'll display on the screen, and you can also bring up a menu to see them when people on your friends list die. And they'll let you know that they've been infected in kind of the general area where they've been infected, so you can actually stumble across them and kill them, and then collect whatever ammo and stuff that they had. So I was playing yesterday, and I was just going along, and then I actually came across Andy's zombified self. He just came running at me, and so I killed him and took a bunch of his, like, Molotov cocktails. And
you killed Andy?
That's why he's like, not on the show this week, guys.
I did him a favor. He was already gone from this world.
What about the cure? Isn't there a cure? Zombrex.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm not super far yet. I'm probably about 2 hours in, maybe 2.5 now after playing today. But I'm really impressed with it. And yeah, it's just super stressful. But just in like all the right ways. Like, yeah. you don't feel overpowered. Like, you really, when you see more than two zombies, like, you're fucked. You really gotta get away. Or use some of your big, like I said, grenades or Molotov cocktails, cause you're just boned.
I mean, the thing that I really like about what I've played of that game, and I have only played like 20 minutes, but I just enjoy how kind of you are powerless, but then you have all these different things you can do to try to, like, not really fight back, but just, like, prevent. Because, like, you have the radar, you have that map that you get, you have all your inventory stuff, you know, right. You have the scanner, and it does a very good job of giving you these faculties that you can do things to kind of, you know, watch your ass. And sometimes those things can attract zombies because you have a light on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you gotta keep your light off.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's really rad. I'm very impressed with it. I'm excited to play some more sparingly because it just freaks me the hell out to play a lot at once. But it's good stuff.
All right, so Patrick.
Yeah.
What you Batman. Gonna talk about?
Yeah, I guess.
Batman's really good. I'm really, really glad I waited.
So I keep on hearing from everyone else except for you that the frame rate in that game is abysmal.
I don't know what people are talking about. I didn't have an issue with that whatsoever.
Like, not even, like, at all?
There was a few instances during cutscenes and stuff where the game would just kind of stop for, like, maybe a second or two. And I thought the whole system locked up because that's happened to me a couple times now. Playing Nintendo Land mostly, not Batman. But then it would just pick right up. But in combat and stuff, everything runs real smooth.
Yeah, that game is awesome.
Yeah. It's really nice that there's they have the Catwoman DLC, and then there's the other DLC and stuff's included on the disc.
Did you play the Harley Quinn stuff?
I started it, and then I just stopped.
I heard it's kind of bad.
I did too.
I played a little bit as Robin. And the Robin stuff, he has, like, different weapons and stuff, so that was kind of cool. Like, he has, like, a shield.
Yeah, those are basically just, like, challenge missions, though, right?
Well, he's a character in the Harley Quinn stuff.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
So you actually get to use him story sense.
I mean, it's the kind of thing where, like, I think if Batman Wii U ever was, like, $20, I'd probably double dip. And I know that sounds kind of dumb because I do own the game on 360 and could probably just get the DLC there. But there's also that part of me that wants the excuse to replay it. And on 360, I already beat it. And I actually tried to go back into that because I beat it and then lent it to a friend. And then when I got it back, I wanted to go and, like, do all the side quests, and I just had no will to do it anymore. I'm like, I already beat this shit. What's the point?
I did all the side quests.
If you replay it on Wii U, you're not going to get, like, a whole bunch out of the gamepad itself.
Yeah, okay.
It's not as good as Arkham Asylum.
I can see like that.
Get off this podcast!
It's not as good. It's nowhere near as good.
I really like... I like both of them, but for different reasons. I mean, they're very similar, but I think Arkham City improves on the combat a lot. But Arkham Asylum has the better kind of, like, Metroid-ish gameplay.
Arkham Asylum is a Metroidvania game, and that is why it's better.
I liked Arkham City's story.
Arkham City's very good. Yeah. I'm not...
It's like comparing, like a fantastic game to a fantastic game at the end of the day.
Yeah, like, you know, everyone knows that Empire Strikes Back is better than Star Wars.
But A New Hope is fantastic.
Nope!
Wait. You don't think A New Hope is good, Zach?
No.
Get the fuck out of here.
Luke is such a whiny little bitch.
Yeah, and then that's what makes it even better when he's a badass in Return of the Jedi.
He's learned the error of his ways.
Yeah.
His little whiny bitch ways.
And he just wanted to go to Tashi Station to get some power converters, man.
Okay.
So, Patrick, tell me about Trine 2.
Oh, this is my first time venturing into Trine. I didn't play Trine or Trine 2 ever before. And I'm not sure how it compares on the PC or... is it available on
it's
the Xbox?
It's on XBLA and PSN. We actually got a... When I got the review code for this from Frozenbyte, they kind of sent like a whole explanation about the kind of genesis of Trine 2 Director's Cut on Wii U. And that it has, you know, the DLC Goblin's Menace, which is, I think it's $15 on everything else, but it's $20 on Wii U because it has this DLC, which I think is $5 everywhere else. It also has some Wii U exclusive stuff, but they're saying that it might not, I mean, like, I think like there's like, you know, super crazy PCs that the game will look better on, but it's basically the best looking version that they have, like, I guess in-house. And it's like, you know, looks way better than the XBLA and PSN games, or so they say, and that they have content on the Wii U one that will likely never come to XBLA and PSN.
But is it on the Steam version?
The Goblin Menace DLC stuff that is included in the Wii U is available on the Steam version, and there's Wii U exclusive levels that are only on, which I think you need to beat everything else first to even unlock them.
The thing about Trine 2, and I really, like, am super interested in it, but $20 is a lot of money for a game that costs, I'm looking at it right now, $7.50 on Steam, and that Goblin DLC is
$4. Wow.
So for $12.50, I could play this game on Steam. Yeah.
But you wouldn't have the gamepad.
The gamepad is, it was really nice to control that game on the gamepad.
Well, I don't like having to draw a square to create
You know what was also awesome? Local co-op with that game, because we did that during the live stream.
That's the one part of the live stream I got to watch.
Fucking awesome.
I was watching you guys put the one character on top of the shield, the knight shield, and jump up with him, and that was
really
cool.
For the majority of the live stream, for anyone who watched it, I was controlling the archer woman on the touchscreen. I forget her name. Zoya, I think.
Zoya.
But this
is one of those games I'll get if I get some point cards in my stocking.
That's how I got it. I got a birthday present of the card.
Yeah, I'm really excited to dive into it. I really, really enjoyed the first one and the second one. I mean, I remember playing the demo at E3 and being like, you know what, I'm going to hold off on getting this because I was thinking about getting it on, I mean, I'm not a big PC guy. I was thinking XBLA or PSN. I was just like, you know what, I'll just hold that for the Wii U version because I'd rather play it on, you know, the lovely gamepad and my Nintendo console. And I'm glad I did, because it's gorgeous.
It's the one game that's more convenient for me to play off this TV because of how much it uses the touchscreen. So I played maybe 30 minutes of it on my television, and the rest of my time...
It does look even better on the television, but it does look fantastic on the gamepad. So yeah, trying to. And your review is up?
It's not. Need to post it.
All right. So it's coming soon.
Yes, it is edited and ready to go.
I'm sure it'll be up besides the time people hear this. So.
Yes, it will be.
So, Zach, Darksiders 2. I'm going to go grab my gamepad and play another game because I don't care.
That's a Zach trick.
Yeah.
Turn the sound on ever so slightly, Neil.
Yeah.
Darksiders 2 is really good. It's kind of a completely different game than the original Darksiders, Neil. It's still pretty combat focused.
Yeah, a game
focused,
that
but...
I didn't enjoy, so.
It's, you know, roughly similar. I mean, you ride around on your horse and kill things with your scythes and go into Zelda dungeons and come out with items and stuff. But, you know, it's a better looking game. It's a much larger, it's just huge. I mean, I'm like, 10 or 11 hours into it, and I think I'm like a third through. The things that are different about Darksiders 2 is there's a huge emphasis on loot. And all your loot is equipment.
They played Borderlands.
Yes. I don't know how I feel about it. It kind of breaks up the game a little bit because I don't like leaving things lying around, so I have to go and look, okay, is this loot any better? No, okay, I'll just either leave it or pick it up, or, oh, it's better, I'll equip it. And then you spend a lot of time selling the loot and buying other things. It's much more of an RPG, or I guess like a Borderlands, than Darksiders 1 was. Darksiders 1 was very directed and linear, and you're just this dude killing other dudes and going through, like, six or seven dungeons and then you win. But this game is all about like doing shit for people. Have you ever played a game where the protagonist is the only guy who in the entire world who can do anything for anybody?
Like Epic Mickey Power of Illusion.
Okay. Well, Death is just an errand boy in this game. I mean, it's still fun, but just the progression of the game is so ham-fisted. It's like the very first thing, you walk into this kind of Celtic, very beautiful Celtic mountainous area, and these big Scottish dudes are like, well, we'd like to help you, but our forges are dried up, so we need you to go, like, fix them. And then you do that, and then they say, okay, we'll let you into this new area now, and here's this key to fix constructs, like golems. You're like, okay, cool. And then you meet this giant golem who's like, well, you're going to need to do this before I can let you into this area. It's just bullshit like that. It really annoys me. You know, if there was a better, I mean, it's just the way the story is put together, but I wish it was put together in a better way. You know, they don't have to make Death an errand boy. It bugs me. The game is still really, really good. It just, and the other thing that bothers me about it, God, now I'm sounding like I'm down on this game. Before I say what bothers me about it, I'll say it's a gorgeous game. It's beautiful. The music is wonderful. I just love the art direction in the Darksiders games. It's just so imaginative and really well done. Now, here's the thing that bothers me. The story, because this is not a sequel and it's not a prequel to the original game, it's like a at the same time.
I forget the term for that.
Concurrental, perhaps. it almost has nothing to do with the original story. Like, you know, while War is off doing his thing on Earth, you're like traveling through these mystical lands and, you know, the land of the dead and this maker world where these big Scottish guys create shit and you eventually go to heaven and hell. I know I haven't gotten there yet, but, you know, every area that has nothing to do with the original Darksiders. And as a result, it feels incredibly disconnected. In fact, your quest starts out as I'm going to, you know, prove that my brother's not guilty of whatever he did in the first game by doing completely other things that have nothing to do with it. So it just feels like a completely different game. You could call this a Darksiders reboot, and I don't think anyone would notice.
The Darksiders.
Yeah, the Darksiders. So I know it sounds like I'm down on the game. I just wrote a review and put it in for editing. I do like it a lot. In fact, I think I gave it like a 9 because its gameplay and its production values so far outweigh the story conceits that just bug the crap out of me.
I mean, it's the kind of thing where, like, it's a good game, it's just not the game that you wanted out of Darksiders 2.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, when they first announced that they weren't going to do a sequel, I was like, "What? Why wouldn't you do that? Because the first game ends on this epic cliffhanger."
Yeah, because after I played some of the first game, I was like, I'm never going to finish this. I read what happened, and that cliffhanger is ridiculous.
Yeah, and then they just don't do it. And I don't know.
We're making a sequel. Guess what? It happened at the same time.
Exactly. And the end of this game ends the same. It necessarily ends the same way as the first game does.
So it basically ends on the same moment.
Exactly.
I mean, I think it's the kind of thing where they're kind of trying to like build up the Four Horsemen separately.
They're trying to build up the world and the mythology.
But they're not going to get that far.
No, they're not going to get past
like,
this game.
We're lucky if we'll ever see a Darksiders 3, because I think the writing's on the wall. I don't know if we will.
And
it sold really poorly on 360 PS3.
And I'm sure Darksiders 3 and 4 will be about what Strife and the fourth Darksider are doing. Famine.
Dude, Famine would be fun. It'd just be like, no motherfuckers can eat anymore.
Although he's not called Famine.
Okay.
They renamed the last two, but anyway, Strife and somebody. You know, this will be the next two games will be about what they're doing at the same time.
They should have like a buddy cop movie where it's just like them in the world of Lethal Weapon.
Oh, that'd be funny.
I would play
that'd
that
be
game.
Great.
Get the Saints Row guy to do that.
Yes. So in about 4 or 5 games, we'll know what happened after the first one.
Yeah, they're not getting that far, unfortunately. THQ is up Schitt's Creek without a paddle.
So the other game I'll talk about is, oh, by the way, Darksiders 2 has all the DLC and even more on the disc, and it's really cool.
Awesome. I mean, you were talking about how, you know, Darksiders 2 being similar to Darksiders 1, and now we're going to discuss a game that is literally the same as it is on another platform.
It has some new stuff.
A few. But I haven't even gotten there yet.
The second half of the game is different.
Well, there is a second half of the game. Right?
Well, sure.
I mean, in the original...
After you get past the normal levels and the bonus levels from the first game, you get remixes, harder remixes of those levels.
So it's basically like the same... Like, the same basic, like, arena, but then with different things placed everywhere, right?
Yes.
Cool. I doubt I will ever get there, because I'm stuck on Incident 13 again. Damn it.
Were you stuck on it on 3DS?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. By the way, we're talking about Mighty Switch Force, by the way.
Yeah, we're talking about Mighty Switch Force HD.
I think I'm stuck on that one on 3DS right now.
Yeah.
Is that one of the bonus levels?
No, it's... There's a couple before. There were 16 originally. At 13, there's just one jump in it that you basically need to hit perfectly, and I'll hit it and then, like, fall off, like, as I get to the top. Because I'm like, holy shit, I actually did it. Don't screw up. Oh, I screwed up.
Is this for a part time?
No, just doing it.
Okay, this is just regular.
For some reason, this jump is just eluding me. I think I did beat it on the 3DS one, but after I did, I was just kind of like, nope, done.
Not to brag, but I have kicked the ass of all the part times up through the fifth hyper mission.
Bravo, sir. Bravo.
Yes.
I think I had all of them up to 12 in the 3DS one, and this one I haven't really worried about part times. I'm just kind of beating. I think I got like 3 or 4 just going through the levels. The ones that
it's a gorgeous game.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. Way better than the 3DS version. The 3DS one still looked pretty good, but I just love seeing the animation.
It's going to be hard to go back.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever will.
Me neither. Have you gotten... No, you haven't. You haven't gotten her alternate costume.
No, I have not. I need to beat Incident 13, which I'll probably go back to after we stop recording this.
After she... If you ever get killed when she's in her alternate costume, she... You know how when she gets killed in her normal costume...
She goes the alternate.
Her costume comes off and you see her in her alternate costume. Well, when she gets killed in her alternate costume, you see her kind of down another level. And that's kind of funny.
So it's like her muscles?
Nope, not muscles.
Skeletons.
Chicks are reploid.
The more you know.
Spoiler?
I don't think so. I think they tell you that. I don't really pay attention to the story in Mighty Switch Force. So, is that all you have to say about that?
Yeah, it's still really good. And even if you have the 3DS version, I think you should... It's only $10.
Yeah, I think it's kind of worth it. As someone who had the 3DS version and didn't even finish it, I'm loving the crap out of playing it. Again, and playing it on the gamepad or even, playing it on the TV is beautiful too. And the music's great.
Yeah.
Jake Kaufman, right? I think so.
Right. Yeah. And the music is remixed in the new stuff.
All right. Well, I'll take it from here. And the first thing I'm going to talk about is a review that I just posted before this. And that's Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed. Which, the single player of this game completely blew me away. It's incredible. It gets very, very hard near the end, though. That's the point that I'm at, trying to unlock the last couple characters. But what they have is it's kind of like, you know, like different areas that you go to, and there's branching paths of different events that you can do. And there's, you know, standard races, and there's stuff like, you know, boost races, where you need to always be boosting or else time runs out. Stuff where, like, you need to pick up missiles to shoot a tank as you drive through a track. Lots of variety in that. And it just...
Have you unlocked Danica Patrick?
Yeah. She's actually one of like the first characters you unlock. And Wreck-It Ralph is in the game when you boot it up, so that's cool. They don't have Opa Opa or the dude from Shenmue anymore, but...
But they've got Vice from Skies
of Arcadia. Yeah, I've been rocking Amigo, because even though... I thought Samba de Amigo on Wii was bad, and I never really played much of the Dreamcast version. I just like the design of his character. And I've been playing as Vice and I, because I always have a soft spot because I love the first Super Monkey Ball.
With Wreck-It Ralph, is it him and Vanellope
No,
in the same
Vanellope
car?
Is not in the game at all, which is kind of surprising.
That's so weird.
Maybe DLC. I know there is, for anyone that will be doesn't want to know about a free character that you'll be getting in like a month or so if you have the game. On Christmas Day, Alex Kidd unlocks, apparently. Like, so I think like in...
Oh, because I'm sure all the modern day Sonic fans even remember who Alex Kidd is.
I mean, he was in the first, the Sonic Racing game, but, I mean, really, like, the single-player experience in this game is so much fun. The really good thing about it that I have to say, after kind of going from Mario Kart 7 and being let down by that to an extent, at least in the single-player. Multiplayer Mario Kart 7 is still as fabulous as ever. But
single-player Mario Kart is never great.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that the single-player in this game is far better than even the multiplayer.
Oh, sure.
And, wow. And it really, like, I kind of just look at Mario Kart 7 as this really undercooked, like, half-assed game, because even the land, sea, and air stuff in that game, it's like a turd compared to the breadth of, you know, you're in a plane and you're in the skies of Arcadia Land, Rogue's Landing, and it's fucking awesome, and, like, you have two tracks where, like, you're primarily on the ground, and then, like, oh, guess what, like, fucking pirates attacked, now there's no land, and you're just doing the entire final lap in the plane, and they do that constantly, where the races transform, Pan's Dragoon, a dragon attacks you during the third lap, well, Dragoon, not dragon. I mean, the cars transform and the levels transform. There is a Burning Ranger stage, which is, I don't know if anyone's really familiar with that. I saw, it's a Firefighters game by the Sonic team. Like, I saw that and was like, is that the Firefighter game? And you're going through the level and there's even a person there's a voiceover being like, there's a fire over here. We're gonna go in that direction. And I guess it's like stuff from the game. I never played it, so I don't really know that much about it. There's, you know, Golden Axe stuff. I'm still looking to unlock Gilius Thunderhead because I like playing as him in games. I played as him in the tennis game because it's fucking the dwarf from Golden Axe. I mean, there's so many, like, lovely Sega references throughout this game. It's really, like, I'm completely taken by the single player, and it's totally worth it for anyone that wants a fun single player kart racing game.
Me.
The online multiplayer is pretty good. I honestly don't think I'll really play it that much, mainly because I don't really play online games that often. I played some Mario Kart online, but even that, I'd rather play with people in the same room. And my experiences with playing this game with people in the same room is kind of weird because, I mean, you can do 5-player split screen, which sounds awesome. Because you have one,
sounds terrible.
You have one person on the gamepad. And then you have split screen, but everything takes a dip. The frame rate's pretty awful. We even tried it with just 4 people. And the weird thing is that one person always has to be on the gamepad, as far as I can tell. I think there might be a way to kind of switch and use a pro controller instead of that, but it's just like unintuitive on how to even do that. And I mean, there's just a lot of this game. I guess the Wii U-ness of the game is kind of like really fucked because they have 2 Wii U exclusive modes where there's one that's a Shinobi one where it's Ninja Tag, where basically the person on the gamepad is Joe Musashi from Shinobi, and you're driving around trying to tag the other people and turn them into ninjas. We started this, 5 people, and the way we all spawned was right in a row. So we spawned, my car went forward as the ninja, and I tagged everyone and it ended. There's a monkey ball one where, like, you know, you one person's in a monkey ball and they're trying to flatten everyone else. Where we spawned, it was a space level, and we just spawned into space and would fall, then respawn, then fall, then respawn. I mean, it's humorous in how terrible it was. There's 5 maps that are both used for the Wii U exclusive party modes, and like 3 of them don't work. There is a patch coming, apparently Sega sent it over to Nintendo and it should be up later this week. But as it stands, it's pretty terrible.
Yay, patches. I keep hoping they'll patch Epic Mickey 2 to fix
hopefully.
The frame rate. If they could do that, I'll be so happy.
But yeah, and then you can play on just the gamepad, which I finally did today after finding out that you could even do it, and it's excellent. And you do it by, like, tapping the screen and holding it and then flicking it, which they don't explain anywhere in the game. It feels like it was kind of like, oh, yeah, let's do that.
Maybe that might be the default. Like, if you just put that line of code in your game, maybe that's the default gesture or something.
Maybe. I like the EA games. I'll do the hold select for 3 seconds, and then you just get it there. I like that.
I like it when it's just in the option menu.
In Madden, it's like when you're in the main menu, it says hold down minus for 3 seconds to go into detached mode. But that's the only place you can do it in Madden, which kind of sucks.
Some games it's hidden in, like Batman, you just have to click start and it's right there on that menu. You just click gamepad only. But for Assassin's Creed 3, you have to click start, navigate over to the options, go into general play, scroll all the way down to the bottom
of the
list.
Can you do that from the gamepad without turning the TV on?
In most of the games that I've played, you can do it from the gamepad. What was I going to say? Scribblenauts does the same thing where it's in a menu that, like, I mean, you know, you boot up the game, you hit a menu, and all the off-TV play does in Scribblenauts, which I won't go into too much detail here. You can read my review. Scribblenauts Unlimited is so fantastic. Lauren and I finished it pretty much 100%. I think there was, like, one douchebag puzzle that might be broken. We don't know. But about 12 hours, and we did every puzzle in the game, and it's awesome.
Wow.
So it's the Scribblenauts you always wanted.
Yeah, pretty much. But Scribblenauts basically just shows the same thing, or at least Scribblenauts, because the person who is, you know, writing everything in is always using the gamepad, so there's not really much sense of even looking at the TV. The only thing that putting that as off TV play does is output the sound from the gamepad. I've been playing a lot of off gamepad stuff, or, you know, gamepad only stuff. I played Madden, on Thanksgiving. And Phil Sims and Jim Nance do the announcing for Madden 13 this year, and I was watching the Houston and Detroit game in which Jim Nance and Phil Sims were commentating on, and that was really weird because I had the sound up a little bit, and I'm playing the game, and I'm like, wait a minute, they said something. I'm like, wait, there's not a touchdown in the game I'm playing. Oh, okay. But that was really smooth, although I vastly prefer playing Madden with the TV and having all the gamepad stuff on it. I think that's really sharp. Just having, like, play selection.
It feels like as long as they can keep the port up to par with the other versions, the Wii U version would be the obvious best choice.
Basically, I noticed when I played two-player, it ran like shit. But when I'm playing single-player, like, there's some bits, like, I've fucked up a couple field goals and kickoffs because it'll just stutter when I'm going through the meter for it. Other than that, it runs fine.
Does it do Online Dynasty?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not gimped in any way.
No, not really. Well, it's missing Madden Ultimate Team, which is the fucking card game.
And it's missing the Infinity Engine, right?
Who cares?
I know. I was going to say, because
wasn't
it's missing...
Wasn't that, like, the only thing they changed on the game?
Oh, well, they changed the number.
Well, yeah. but look, because the Infinity Engine is gone, there's no chance that your kick receiver is going to just... let the ball slide out of his hands like it's made of butter so that the other team can just run it 10 yards for a touchdown.
Sure. So, anyways, Madden 13, gamepad stuff, really cool. I also beat Little Inferno last night, which that game is really, 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 really weird, but I was completely in love with it. And I mean, I beat it in about 3 hours, and all you really do in that game is that you have a little space that you know, it's like a fireplace, and it's your little Inferno Entertainment fireplace, and you start off, and just touching anywhere on there, you'll start a fire, and you start off with one catalog, and you buy things in that catalog, and you burn them, and then you get money. And then you use that money to buy more things to burn them. And there's also, as you go through, you'll realize that there's a combo list. It'll say stuff like, movie night combo, which is, you know, you burn an ear of corn and a TV set. And then you get that combo and you get more money. And then you get another catalog and you do this all again. But, I mean, there's almost a kind of a puzzle nature to it because you're trying to figure out these combos based on just like a word, and then like you'll know it's two or three items. And you'll have to go through, and usually there's clues in the little descriptions for every item in it, or you can just kind of put two and two together. Like, there's some Hatsworth and World of Goo references in it, which are kind of clever. Like, there's a worldly gentleman that you can buy, and if you burn him, then jewels come out of him. But it's almost like a puzzle game because, like, you know, first you start off with one catalog, and there's a list of, like, I don't know, something like 10 combos that you can get. And when you get the second catalog, then, like, you know, 10 more unlock. But those can be included from any of the first two catalogs. And then so by the end of it, you have 7 catalogs and you're trying to figure out these combos, and you have, you know, like 100 items that you're going through trying to figure out, okay, how do I solve this one? And then there's this really weird, dark story going on in the background and a really kick-ass finale that is just like weird and satirical.
It's a story of how you're an arsonist.
I mean, but like everyone's an arsonist in that world. From what I can gather,
you live in some sort of nuclear winter, and the fireplace is the only way you can stay alive.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, $15 is kind of expensive for this game. I'll totally admit that. But for me, I do not regret it for a second. Even though it was only a 3-hour experience, but I'm also weird in that I'd rather have a nice solid 5-hour experience than a, you know, 15-hour bloated one. But I think this game's really, really cool. And in the same way you guys are telling me to play Journey, I'm telling you
to play friggin'
this.
Journey.
Would you play Little Inferno?
It doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of game there.
It doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of game to Journey either.
Well, you're wrong.
You know what? You know what? Your face doesn't have a whole lot of game to it.
Yeah.
You know what? I know that when I play Journey, I'll enjoy it. But I just like fucking with you guys.
Zach, as my redemption for being right about a Nintendo Direct coming, I want you to buy me Little Inferno. Boom. I don't think you can get things.
You can't. I'm going to have to just PayPal you some money.
All right.
Rubbing his hands together audibly.
Should have gone for Trine 2, dummy.
Well, Trine 2 is 20, so I don't want to break the bank or nothing on Zach.
But. You could use his $15 and 5 of yours.
No, I'll get Little Inferno. I want to check it out. And for free, you can't beat that. Yeah. So. Also, every time you keep saying you enjoy a 3-hour experience, I want to make like a sting tantric sex joke. But
that never happens. Never happens.
If an erection lasts for longer than 3 hours, call more ladies.
Yeah, exactly.
I've also, my review for Chasing Aurora will be up by the time you hear this, because it is already done. It's just that I had that and Sonic Racing finish at the same time, so I'm not going to just post 2 reviews back to back. But Chasing Aurora is a turd.
You'll probably also be able to read my Darksiders 2 review.
There are like 50 million reviews up on the site right now. You should read them all. Yeah, like I think at this point we've had at least 10 Wii U reviews in the past week, and we're only going to have more.
You can look forward to my Your Shape review alongside a video review later this week.
Oh, that's
going to
be sexy.
Oh, you're going to see me in some workout clothes. It's going
to
be good.
And I'm telling you, I still have to review Skylanders for Wii U as well. It's been sitting there being like, hey, baby, come on over here.
I'll have a tank review going up next week.
Oh my god, tank.
Yeah, Patrick finally got tank in the mail, and I'm excited to hear the tragedy. I mean, awesomeness. Maybe both.
I'll have to put together that paper
craft. Yeah, it came with a paper craft that I sent to Patrick.
Oh my god.
What?
I like how Zach's probably pissed because Darksiders 2 came in a fucking sleeve and Patrick gets a paper craft.
Oh my god, that annoys me so much. There's no instruction manual. I don't know how to play off TV.
Zach, you do realize it comes with a digital manual.
I don't think it does.
Every game.
All games
comes
do.
Everything does. Manual.
Hit the home button again when you're playing the game.
Well, oh, you know what? One more thing about Darksiders 2 before we wrap this up. Play on a pro controller. Do yourself a favor.
I will.
Go buy a pro controller.
I will, but I've never played that game.
Playing it on the gamepad sucks. Have you ever swam by using gyro controls? No,
well,
you shouldn't.
Yeah, I have. It's called Super Mario Galaxy, and it was pretty awesome.
Oh, well, but with a giant fucking gamepad? Yeah. No, that doesn't work.
Supposedly there are gyro controls in Sonic, but I just never bothered with them because this isn't 2007 anymore. I don't give a shit about that.
Yeah, they
that.
Usually suck.
I know people play multiplayer. They used Wii Remotes on their side and were like, fuck this, and then plugged in nunchucks.
You guys have probably seen it on, like, Target end caps, but I saw a thing where it was like a steering wheel for your 3DS.
Yeah. I saw that at the Memorex booth, like 2 years ago at E3.
What is it, like just like a piece of like injection molded plastic that you could snap a 3DS into? Yeah.
The best is I love that, I think it was Memorex. I might be shitting on some other third party publisher. But yeah. Mike is telling us to finish up, and we will, but Memorex kept on saying that they had some inside thought about, like, Nintendo is going to release this motion-controlled racing game, and it's going to be amazing, and I guess technically Mario, you could race with motion controls in first person.
Excite Truck.
Yeah, but on the 3DS, Scott. Alright, yeah, that's Wii U third-party stuff via 3DS steering wheels. Hope you enjoyed. Write us at connectivity at NintendoReport.com. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Enron10.
I'm at ZMiller1902.
I'm at StrikerOB.
At OKSoda.
At Papatch15.
See you guys next week. We'll probably be talking more about this shit.
Probably.
Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. Today, I'm joined by Patrick Barnett.
Hey, hey.
And Tyler Olu.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Paper Mario Sticker Star, a sort of divisive game, I think. I just reviewed it. The review went up late last week. I gave it a 7.5 out of 10. And we're going to talk about the game, the pros and cons, and should be pretty good. I think it's a game worth talking about. That's not the best score in the world, but there's a lot, I don't know, there's just a lot to this game that to like and to...
Yeah, it's weird, Scott, I think I told you this already, but I really, really like the game, but I completely agree with your 7.5 score. And like your review in general.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's like, it's not a game I would totally recommend the game to most people.
Oh, yeah.
But it's flawed in a lot of weird ways. Let's start first... What's both of your experience with Paper Mario in general?
All of them.
Okay, so Tyler, you've played all of them?
Yeah, like, it's a really great series. I think I have, like, I think I had a 64, but I never got Paper Mario. And then on the GameCube, I played Thousand Year Door. So I found some, like, crazy rundown, like, convenience store, and they had Paper Mario, and I bought it from them. I was like, can I just buy this game from you guys? And they're like... Oh, give us 3 weeks and we'll get back to you. And I was like, all right. And 3 weeks later, they're like, okay, we'll still do it for like $20. I was like, awesome. And I get it home and it like glitched like crazy. So I was like, oh, someone had like a crazy Paper Mario 3 week marathon where they like ruined the game. But it was like crazy. Like you get like code and stuff on the screen. Like I'm not some tech guy, but it was nuts. Like it was weird. So I was like, okay. And then like I have no like foresight. Like I cannot see into the future and I never thought of a digital download feature, so then eventually I got it on the Wii. And, I played Super Paper Mario. I did not hate it. I enjoyed it, but I can see why people want the Thousand Year Door 2, and which Sticker Star isn't, but it's good. It's its own thing, though.
Yeah. What about you, Patrick?
I started with Thousand Year Door, and I don't know, it was kind of mediocre to me. It really dragged a lot. Like, I never actually beat it, because it was just, I got towards the end, and I was just done with that game. It just got so hard. From there, I went Super Paper Mario, which I beat, and I actually really like that one, like Tyler. And then I downloaded 64 Paper Mario, which I didn't beat, but I got close to the end, while I was homesick for a week.
Oh, well, there you go. I guess I'm kind of the same. I've played through the games in order as they've come out, but I've never actually beaten any of them. Well, no, I think I beat the first Paper Mario, but same thing, like, Patrick, like, I remember liking Thousand Year Door, but, like, I definitely just burnt out at some point. It was a game I was just, like, I got to a point where I was like, I'm happy with what
I feel
played.
Like I put in, like,
on.
50 to 60 hours into that game. I might be exaggerating, but that's just what it felt like to me, and I still wasn't done.
No, that's all we're talking. I think, like, the last boss fight is, like, 3 hours of that.
That was the problem.
I was stuck on it, but the thing was, it was, like, the longest cinematic before it started. And it was like, you have to sit through it. You couldn't skip it.
Every time.
And so, if you wanted to retry it, it had to do those things where, like, it showed all the villagers in, like, every area you visited. And then it would be them being like, Mario, we love you. Here's our power. And it was, like, such a brutal boss fight, too, on top of that. So, I think I beat it, like, a year later, I went back to it and had no problem.
Yeah, so, and even Super Paper Mario I had the same problem with, where it was like, I enjoyed it. I just never finished it. And I was happy with what I played. I mean, I liked my time with it. And I'm hoping it's not going to be the same for Paper Mario Sticker Star. But now that I'm done with the review, I'm finding, like, especially now that the Wii U's out, like, I'm having a hard time wanting to sit down and play it. But I think I'll get through it. I'm about, like, 13 hours in. But let's talk about that game a little bit. So, like Tyler said, it's not really, like, a return to the first two games, necessarily. But I guess it's closer to them than Super Paper Mario was. The sort of, like, 2D Mario stuff, it is gone. You've got the turn-based battles and everything. But instead of, like, traditional, like, equip these items and use your attacks as much as you want and level up, like, that's all gone. And all you do now is use stickers that you either buy or find in the environment. And if every time you use a sticker, it's gone. You get one use. And if you run out of stickers, then, I mean, that's it. You lose the battle and then you have to just go get more, which I don't think is a problem.
The stickers are everywhere.
Right. Like, very plentiful.
I never run into the situation where I'm out of stickers. More is the case where my sticker book is full and I'm angry at myself.
Yes. And then you gotta, like, toss out a sticker so you can get the shiny sticker.
Cleaning the fridge in a different way.
Exactly.
I'm addicted to, you, like, press start to bring up your album and press it and then press start again to,
sort it.
I love sorting it. Like, I have to do it all the time. Cause it keeps them all together. Like, you'll be like, oh no, I just want, like, a shitty weak hammer. And all I got are awesome shiny ones. And then, like, the last page is, like, where the shitty hammer is.
He's, like, tucked away, yeah, like, at the back of your scrapbook.
I don't like the way it sorts stuff sometimes, though. Like, on my main page, I have the giant lucky cat and a giant hammer that I found somewhere. Like, I don't like those on my main page.
Yeah. I would like those all towards the end. Cause I have the same thing where, like, I have a giant shoe and then, like, you know, like boots and stuff. And at the end, there's other special ones, like some ice cream and stuff. Like, but I don't know why all the special stuff just isn't together, but whatever. But yeah, like you guys said, like, running out of stickers is not a problem. Like, I think for anyone who hasn't gotten to this game yet, I can't imagine that being an issue. Like,
no.
It's next to impossible and it's ridiculous. It's not gonna happen. Like, you'd have to, I don't know what would have to happen for you to lose them.
I felt like I was low on stickers early in the game. Like, once you get out of DeKalberg, I think once I got through the first level in World 1, I did go back to the shop to buy some more stickers, because you only get two pages in the very beginning, which you can't hold very much. I think I did go restock once, but then, since then, I've never had to, like, buy stickers because I was low. The only reason I've had to buy stickers is because certain puzzles require certain stickers, and, you know, sometimes you don't have them, which is such a pain to have to go, like, all the way back to town to buy, like, a fire sticker to melt snow, which you guys will see soon enough. You guys will get there. So, like, some of those environmental puzzles where you need specific stickers kind of blow, and you gotta go track them down. It's not too bad. You're never gonna really run out. But it is still an interesting mechanic, the sticker system. And I don't know, like, I could leave it. Like, I think it's well implemented, but I could happily go back to just, like, traditional equipment item, learn new, you know, abilities as you go through the game and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think a big hang-up for a lot of people is the loss of, like, experience points and leveling up and stuff like that, which I can see why it's missing, and, like, it doesn't really bother me. Like, I think this works perfectly fine as far as combat goes. But I certainly do miss, like, the offensive mechanics of, like, when you're being attacked. Like, right now it's just, like, block, but you will take damage.
Mm-hmm.
And before, like, if you timed it, you could either take no damage or hurt the enemy in, like, 1,000-year door. I think that's really lame that it's gone, and it's, like, because it's, like, all tied to stickers, I guess they're like, well, then Mario can't use his hammer without using a sticker. But then he jumps in the game without using a sticker every time to jump, so.
Right.
I think that idea just gets thrown out right away.
Like, well, he uses his hammer if you hammer an enemy to start a battle.
Yeah, that's
he
true,
uses
too.
His
like,
hammer.
I don't know, but in battle you can't defend yourself with it.
Right.
It's so weird.
That's true, and you're guaranteed to take damage. Even if you block an attack perfectly, like, you never take zero damage, which is kind of a pain.
But the battle spinner's good. Do you guys use that a lot?
Oh, yeah. Every boss battle.
I only use it in boss battles.
Yeah.
I never buy stickers. I never have any need. Like, so I just, you know, I just build a mass of a crazy collection. And then in battles, I just blow through the stickers. For people who haven't played it yet, like, the battle spinner, it's almost just like a roulette system. And the first time you bring it up, it's just, you know, three random things spinning. And if you can get two or three of a kind, it'll let you use two or more stickers, depending on if you get two or three. And, but you can also kind of, like, pay more money into it, and, like, the first time it makes sure that you at least get two, so that's a good way to pay to get to that. And then if you pay more, then it slows down very, very quickly, so you can kind of have a better chance of getting three, which I never get. I never get three. And if I do get three, it's the three poison mushrooms. So it's like you get three moves, but you also get poisoned, and it's terrible.
I've never gotten the poison.
I always get the poison. Poison or coins, but I think I got the coins once, and I've got the poison like three times. It's ridiculous.
Well, it goes so slow. You should be able to easily skip the poison.
I think it's like I get so so now when I do it, what I'm doing is I wait and watch for the slow one, for the poison one to happen, and then I go. Then I'm like, okay, I can go right now. But before I'd be like, oh, I just want to get this over with, and I'd hit it, and then I would just end up with poison.
Always be the poison.
Oh, it's the worst, yeah.
yeah, I've matched three probably like three times throughout the entire game, and I'm like 13 hours into it. So yeah, three is very, very hard, but even two is enough to give you a pretty good advantage.
It feels like it's more luck than timing.
It is. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah,
I mean,
the third little roulette wheel that does not slow down. That one stays fast like all through any stage of
right.
it. So it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's very hard to match up.
Yeah, it's just good for boss battles because one weird thing is that this game does not let you choose who you attack. The enemies line up, and the first sticker always goes towards the first enemy, second sticker towards the second, and third towards the third. So you kind of like, you can kind of strategize with it, but it can be kind of complicated. But, you know, there'll be attack stickers that attack all the enemies, but it's just weird when you were like, I want to attack the second guy who I jumped on to injure him to get into this battle, so I know he's weak, but I have to kill the first guy first.
Right, yeah, because he's in the middle, like, the middle of the line. Yeah, that's kind of a weird addition to the battle system. But like you said, there's stickers that will attack the group in total, or that will attack like the first two enemies and that kind of stuff. But that is why the battle spinner is great for boss battles, because if he has like any lackeys with him, then you can use that to like clear out what's in front quickly and then, you know, get to the harder enemy. But I will say the loss of an experience system kind of like diminishes, I don't know how much I actually want to battle. Like it gets to a point as you get further into the game that it's just like, there's no reason to fight any of the enemies on the map. Like, you have to fight the bosses, obviously, but as far as just, like, random little, like, Goombas and Koopas, you know, who just are on the, you know, in throughout the levels, there's no reason to stop and fight them, really.
Well, I'm not sure. I kind of noticed this. I'm not sure if it's actually a real thing, but I seem to think the more enemies you fight during a stage equals more coins you get at the end of the stage after you reach the goal star, and the coins, like, rain down from the sky.
There might, I think you're right. There's probably something linked to that. And you get coins for beating enemies, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, you know, just even after the battle, you
I just noticed
coins.
That, like, when I run through a stage and I don't battle any enemies, I barely get any coins raining down on me.
Yeah. Sure.
And the coins are really for buying more stickers and the battle spinner. So, I don't know, like, just... And if I'm not buying stickers, then there's no real need for it. It's, like, it's just a weird thing where you're, like, the coins are, like, okay, but... I don't know, I think, like, you can buy, as you go through the stages, you'll see, like, silhouettes of doors, and later on in the game, you can buy stickers that allow you access to those secret stages. So, like, sorry, just secret areas. So I think in that case, like, then you'd kind of want money because you want to buy this expensive sticker, but I have no need for that. I do not care, so...
Yeah, I don't care either.
Where am I going to go?
I was telling Tyler before the recording, but I buy so many stickers to paperize things because, especially in the desert area, this is kind of a spoiler, maybe, so skip ahead 30 seconds. But you need the vacuum to clear out the dust, and I couldn't figure out that I needed the vacuum. So I was just buying stickers.
And just sticking them there?
Just sticking them there. And then I needed them again later, and oh, I just ran into so much issues. I burned through like 800 coins.
Oh, God. Yeah, so that's bad. The only time I've ever really like burned through money is, I think, actually the fight with the blooper. Which, Tyler, have you beaten the blooper or you're at the blooper?
I'm at the blooper and I get really close and then you can get poisoned.
Yeah.
So if you probably, like, but it seems like I'm playing it poorly.
You know what you need? You need the one-up mushroom. Because when you use the one-up mushroom for 10 turns, it refills your health by 10 points every turn.
Yeah. I don't think I've even found one. Like, I think I've just used standard mushrooms.
Yeah, one-up mushrooms. I think you can, you find them, and I think you can buy them from, like, the store. I want to say it's actually the store that's in the first world, like, World 1-5. Or level, yeah, World 1-5.
Yeah, okay.
There's, like, a little store up there that you can get to.
Yeah, they sell the doors, right?
Yeah. And so No, World 1-5 doesn't sell the doors. The one that sells the doors are the ones, is the shop in the forest.
Oh, okay.
At, like, the lookout. But if you go to World 1-4, Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's World 1-5. It's a secret one. You have to, yeah, you have to get through, like, World 1-3 or something through the secret exit to get it. But yeah, when you do, I think there's a little shop there and you can buy them. But yeah, that will totally make that fight easier for you because you're not wasting a sticker, you know, refilling your health. It'll just take care of it for you every turn. So I think it's enough that it heals, like, what you're losing from the poison. So that's what you need.
And you brought up an interesting thing to say there just for listeners is, like, the stage, like, the game, partly because it is a handheld game, they're broken up into levels, like, more clearly defined, like, Mario classic kind of levels where it's just a beginning and an end, and there are secret exits, and you get them through various means, but it just makes things more bite-sized. Like, you don't have to spend an hour just to clear through an area and wait and hope you can find a save thing. Like, there's it's really rare to have a save button in the middle of a stage. It's just you kind of just beat it and get it over with and save out the world map.
Absolutely, yeah, unless there's a boss battle or something, but you're right, yeah, for the most part, it's just like, yeah, the level is just small enough. My complaint, though, and like my biggest complaint, if we're going to get to that now, is how the game relies on things, which are the real world items. We've already mentioned a handful of them that you find in the game that you can turn into stickers and use. So like scissors or a radiator or a vacuum cleaner or a sponge or a million other things. It was like leading up to this game after seeing the E3, it was like, oh, that's cute. There's a cat statue, scissors. And, like, I think that was pretty much all we saw. And it was like, that's cool. There's going to be, like, a few things in it. And then you play the game and you're finding things fucking every minute. And, like, you need specific ones to progress in levels. And, like, my biggest problem with that is it's not self-contained within that level. So it's like, you're not in a level where you need the vacuum cleaner, but the vacuum cleaner is just hidden somewhere else in that level. It's like you got to go back to a whole nother world and find the vacuum cleaner in some secret hidden spot. And if you didn't get it the first time you went through that level, and now all of a sudden you need the vacuum cleaner, you really have no idea, like, where to go. There's a little bit of a hint system, but I find it, like, almost completely ineffective.
That's exactly what I was describing earlier, though, where I didn't know what to use.
Exactly. So you threw every sticker you had on there to no avail. So it's like the game almost forces you to use a walkthrough, unless, like, you really just are so in love with the game that you're willing to go through every single level and explore, like, every nook and cranny, which, I mean, if that's what you want to do, cool.
But I never really had a problem, like personally, like, the things, the puzzles that use things, I never really had too much of an issue. Like, I found that I would just find them, like, naturally, like, through the course of the game, and I was such a weird, like, thing hoarder that I, like, never used them, and I just kept them around, and my book would just fill up like crazy, but I was always too afraid to use them. But what I would agree most, like, 100% on is that the things, some of them are tied to, like, boss battles, and, like, they're really obtuse. Like, I would never be like, oh, obviously use this. I think right now, the boss I'm at, it's a bit more clear, but even still, of, like, the item I use just based on, like, what he is and what this item does, but, it's definitely more clear, but still, you gotta use it at a certain point. And that point is not made clear. And in the case where I'm at now, if I say I have two moves, if I use this special item and then a standard one after that, then it'll, like, go away. I mean, it doesn't matter. Then it's, like, lost. And
right.
It serves no point. So it's like you have to, like, take that into account. Like, it's just all these unknown things that otherwise make the boss fights, like, a total nightmare if you don't know to use a thing like
that. Oh, yeah. I mean, almost unbeatable, really. I mean, the very, like, the second boss,
yeah,
or is it?
I just ran into that issue myself. That second boss, you need a certain item, and you need to use it at a certain phase during the fight.
It's what's that enemy called? The big cactus guy. I wrote the name of my review. I can't remember the name of him.
No, I was going to say Wriggler. That's not right.
No, that's the little, like, caterpillar guy. Well, anyway, I mean, if you've played a Mario game, you know who he is. He's from Super Mario World. He's the cactus guy. Yoshi can eat him. Oh, Pokey. Yeah, you're right. It's Pokey. What happens in that fight? I mean, there's, just to let you guys know now, there's going to be spoilers in this conversation. So if you haven't played the game and want absolutely no spoilers, then I guess turn it off. But you're going to need spoilers anyway, because I doubt you're going to get very far in the game without reading walkthroughs regardless. So, but yeah, so you fight a giant Pokey with like 300 health, and this is like the second boss in the game. So you've probably got like, what, like maybe 35 health?
I have 45. Added.
Oh, well, Patrick had a 45,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah. Better than everyone else.
So, I mean, you're pretty much, like, boned if you're going to try to just use your stickers. So what you have to do is you find a baseball bat, like, three levels earlier or two levels earlier. You turn that into a sticker, and then you use the baseball bat to knock out the segments of his body. So then it's just his head on the ground.
Yeah, but the thing is, too, is, like, he has 4 segments, and you have to wait, you have to attack him naturally and get him down to, like, 3 segments. Like, is that correct? Like, that's what the walkthrough said.
He builds up. He starts the fight just as his head, and then each turn he gets a segment of his body back, and you're right, you have to wait until he has either 3 or all the segments in
I waited until all 4 were up.
Okay, yeah, and then you have to use the bat. Yeah, and then you knock the segments away, and that drops his health down to 100 max, and then you can beat him. But yeah, without it, I mean, you'll use every single sticker you have and probably not be able to completely beat him without that bat.
It's just weird. Like, who would think I need to use a baseball bat on this Pokey to knock away his body parts?
Right, and, like, the thing is, you'd never use those stickers during regular battles, so it's like you're just not prepared for that, especially so early in the game. Like, you wouldn't think that. Now, there are some clues, like, for instance, when you start the battle, it does say play ball, and which is kind of a little hint. It does, when the battle starts, it says play ball, and so
after I was done with the fight, I recognized the whole area was kind of like a stadium, and that it made more sense to me then after I was done.
And when you pull out the baseball bat, it plays some sort of like kind of classic baseball like chant or cheer, but to the tune of like the World 1-1 theme from the original Super Mario Brothers. So like it's really cool. Like there's a lot of like, I don't know, it's really creative in that way. And I mean it's fun once you figure it out what you need to do, but it's just aggravating. Like basically you're expected to go to that battle and lose and then go back, get the baseball bat and come back. I mean there's just no way you'd think to have the baseball bat for that. It's not till you start the fight that it says play ball and like you notice the stadium and all that kind of stuff. So it's just kind of a pain. And I feel like the game does that a lot where it's just like you get to a point and then it completely like halts all progression because you have to go back to your inventory and then make a sticker out of something and then come back. And it's just kind of a pain. I don't know why. I don't understand this obsession with things that the game has.
But one thing that I would speak very highly of is like just the levels themselves. Like the puzzles in them are very creative and interesting, and like it's almost like akin to like a Zelda game. Like you're in these dungeons and there's like secret doorways like that are very crazy hidden, and sometimes you just gotta look at things and be like, well, that looks kind of weird and crumply, and you'll hit it with your hammer and then all of a sudden like the world just starts falling apart around you and like opens up new ramps and stuff like that. It's really, really interesting, and I don't remember that it ever being like that in any of the previous Paper Mario games. Like, it's pretty cool. No, they just have like weird like environmental puzzles like that you're kind of like, and it's interesting, like you have to remember that you're in a sticker based world, and like one is like as you're trying to cross a bridge, there's a fence blowing across and blowing at you, and it'll knock you off the bridge, and basically you have to go under the bridge and look, and you know the view changes and it shifts to look at where those, you know, the vents, and then you just put stickers over the vents. And then you can cross the bridge. And it took me a while to realize that. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, neat. And if you paperize, it's just, you hit the Y button and the screen kind of falls down and Mario's hovering above it. And you put stickers over wherever you want. There's always like little boxes where you can put stickers. So they don't just leave it incredibly open and you have no idea what to do. But so that kind of helps out.
The environment, you mentioned how you, like the puzzles are like in the environment. I just remember there was that one instance in World 1, I forget which level specifically, but you like just use your hammer on something and everything in the whole level just begins falling over.
I just thought that was really cool. Yeah, there's just really neat. And they do more than any of the previous Paper Mario's. Like I remember even before thinking, like, why do they put such a focus on Mario being made of paper when the rest of the world, like, barely has anything to do with it. Like, they never really played with that concept well at all, but this game they certainly do, and everything's like crumpled up and folded, and they play with cardboard, and just the environment, like you can knock over bushes, like they hide stuff behind bushes like you wouldn't believe. It's crazy. You just hammer it and it falls down, and everything just looks like stage props. It's really interesting.
Right. Yeah, totally. And I really love that. I do think there's a much stronger conviction to the theme of like paper. it's really well utilized in this game. And, I mean, that is the shame. It's like, the game looks great, and I love the style, and I do love the conviction to the paper theme, you know, throughout. And that's why I just wish the boss fights and the puzzle solving were a little bit, like, better executed, because the game really, like, I don't know, Zelda games don't really look inviting to everyone, I don't think. Like, you know, I think specific group of people who would go and pick up and play a Zelda game. But, like, Mario is so iconic that it's, like, easy for anyone to see a Mario game and like kind of want to play it. Like when I got Paper Mario to review it, my girlfriend like saw the case and just, like, fell in love with it. Because, like, Mario's adorable, and it's all bright, and, you know, like, it just, it's a very, like, cute-looking game. But then she tried to play it, and she just got frustrated and stopped.
Like, that's me back with Super Mario RPG. Like, I was like, when I was, like, a kid, and I was like, what is this game? This is terrible. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, so it's just, like, it's, and that's fine. I mean, the game doesn't have to be, like, you know, like, dumbed down in any way. I mean, I appreciate that it's trying to be, you know, like, difficult. But I just wish it was a little, like, more transparent in its design and, like, in what you need to do. I find that you get stuck a lot.
It's pretty vague most of the time.
Yeah, totally. But what I will say is that the writing and the localization are awesome. Like, I think the game is really funny most of the time. And I love Kirsty, the character, and I just love her relationship with Mario and the different, like, bosses and all the shit she'll talk to Bowser Jr. and all that kind of stuff. And
also say, though, but it doesn't compare to the previous ones. Like, the localization team themselves said that a lot of credit goes to Intelligent Systems for, like, it being very sight gag. It's, like, a lot of visual things. Like, there's not as much writing or story at all in this game as there were in previous titles. So that was a disappointment for me. And I do think that the game is funny, and I do think those sight gags are good. But there's still, it's totally lacking, and there's no, the characters are all toads, the enemies are all common Mario enemies, which actually came to light recently with the Iwata Ass, where it was like Miyamoto was the one that wanted that. And it was just like, no, let's have less story and characters and enemies that people know already. Like, it was like, okay. It's a step down in that regard, but still enjoyable.
Right. And see, I think that feeds into the problem, like, I'm talking about with my girlfriend, because it looks like it should just be a regular old Mario game. I mean, even the world map and stuff, like, it just feels like it should be an old Mario game, and then it's just completely not.
I wonder if she'd like Super Paper Mario, just because that played like a Mario, like, where it was, you were jumping on the enemies, and it had that story and stuff like that. You know, just jumping on enemies to kill them, and you didn't go into, like, a separate battle screen, but,
right.
That's its own story.
Yeah, I don't know. I think she'd like it once you get into the levels, but if I remember correctly, that game had a lot of, like, issue too, where it's, like, between levels, I felt like it was very hard to get to the next level, especially as you got further on, like, you had to go through, like, kind of the world area.
Yeah, that hub, like, world was really confusing world to navigate.
Yes. Yeah, so I could see her easily getting stuck in that too. I got stuck in that. That's probably why I stopped playing. I just couldn't figure out where to go next and just never went back to it. But yeah, I don't know. I guess that's Paper Mario Sticker Star. I mean, do you guys have anything else you wanted to say about it?
I wanted to mention the music because it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Damn it. You're right.
I think it was Neil, I think, on Twitter that said he played, like, Paper Mario and then New Super Mario Brothers U, and you can just see how lazy they are in that game compared
that
was, to
I
Paper
actually
Mario.
Said that.
Oh, was it you? Okay.
I said that, and that's okay. I said that in Nintendo Land. Like, between Nintendo Land and Paper Mario, it's like the music's so good in both of those, and it really exposes how lame the music is in New Super Mario Bros. U. Up into the last world. Have you guys made it to the last world in New Super Mario Bros. U?
I'm in the whatever mountain area it is. I can't remember.
Okay, so you're just shy of it.
Just shy of that cloud area.
Okay, and then after the cloud area, you get to Peach's Castle. But in the very, I mean, it's, you know, it's just music. Hopefully you don't think this is like a crazy spoiler. But the music for the last, like, world, that plays, like, on the world map is, like, this crazy, like, haunting rendition of the castle theme from Mario 64.
Oh.
And it's really, really cool. Like it just, it's super, like, kind of, like, dark and, like, ominous. But, like, you recognize that, like, the music is, like, just being upbeat and happy. So it's kind of cool hearing it in this light. It's totally awesome.
I'll have to look forward to that.
That was the one exception. But every other music track in that game is kind of lame. But yeah, Paper Mario, the music's great. Like, whether it's just original music or just kind of, like, spin-offs of just classic themes.
There's a lot of it that just feels really jazzy to me. I don't know if that's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very upbeat. Yeah, I would totally agree with that.
It made me think a lot of, like, Epic Yarn. Like, just, Epic Yarn was noted for how jazzy it sounded and just played with old Kirby themes, and I think this is the same. Like, really interesting takes on Mario music.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, this game, apart from difficulty, is very much like, you know, sort of like Epic Yarn. I felt like Epic Yarn was very much, you know, like, convicted to the craft theme, which
you couldn't die in that game either.
That's true, and you couldn't die in that game. But I think they took a lot of what Epic Yarn did and then applied it to this. As far as, like, Tyler, what you were saying, like the all the environments feeling like paper and cardboard and all that kind of stuff, versus the other games. So.
I think the only thing that I would want to say is, like, I think of the just from reading your review and the score you gave it, which I don't really want to contest scores like that, but and be like, I would give it a bigger number than you. But I do, I'm more high on the title, and I do realize that this entire podcast is so easy to just drown in the negative, but it's still a good game. It's just that there's the stuff, the decisions that were made were really, really odd, and I don't know if it's something to do with getting this game out. Like, this was Nintendo's holiday game in North America, and that's why Miyamoto had to step in and be like, no, no, you gotta cut down the story. Or if this is just the way they want to take decisions. I don't know if Intelligent Systems has some sort of issue where, like, they don't want to burn out making very common JRPGs. Like, they just finished Fire Emblem, and they have to get Paper Mario out now. So I don't know if that was an issue, and they just kind of want to just keep using Paper Mario as, like, an experiment for, like, JRPGs or something. But but it's still very enjoyable. I'm having a lot. I would never tell anyone not to play it, but I think just the problems with it are so odd. And you know that they – it's not like Nintendo to have these weird boss fights where you need to come prepared with an obscure item that you likely missed, that you may not have at all. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I enjoy the game. I'll beat the game, I'm sure. I promise myself I'll beat the game. I want to beat a Paper Mario game. And it's totally fun. Like, when things are clicking, when you're going through the levels, like, you know, and you're just progressing, it's totally awesome. I mean, it's great. But then you just hit those road bumps where things just come to a complete halt, and you gotta either go find an item or at least just go back and get the item and then figure out what you gotta do with it. Cause like you said, it's not even so much just having an item, especially in the boss fights. It's like you gotta use it at the right time. So there's just a lot of like trial and error.
If they did something as simple as letting you like paperize on the go so you don't have to go all the way back to the town to create that specific item.
Yes, that's a good point too, yeah, because those items are in your inventory, like the baseball bat or the scissors, but you can't use them in battle until you turn them into stickers, and you're right, you have to go all the way back to town to do that, or to one of the, you know, I think you can also do it in the shop in the forest. But still, you know, it's like you still have to go out to the world map and go to a certain specific level, enter it, and then go do it, and then leave and go back to where you were. I mean, it would be great if Kirsty, that's just something she could do right in your inventory. Yeah, I agree, that would alleviate some of the headache there. But yeah, it's a great game. I mean, I said in my review, I gave it a 7.5, and I said I wanted to love this game, I really did, but instead I just like it. And like, that's fine, you know? You know, it's not binary where every game's good or bad. This game is good but flawed. And that's fine. It's okay.
Yeah.
That can happen. So yeah, I guess that's it. So Patrick, Tyler, thanks for being here. You, the listener, if you've got any thoughts about Paper Mario, if you've been playing it, either leave it in the talkback thread or email us, connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. We'll be glad to read those and respond to those. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys later.
Yep, bye.
Bye.
All right, and that will do it. As always, you can send us listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You should follow all of us on Twitter. We gave out our Twitter handles in that first segment, but you can also go to NintendoWorldReport.com and look for the Twitter sidebar and find all our usernames there. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes if you haven't done that. We'd love to get your feedback there. And I will see you guys next week for episode 63.